this week on the Inside Flap.
I got back to campus with 68, but the 68th was the wrong person. I'd left a kid in London and some random teenager just had jumped on our bus. That goes on your permanent record, you know? No, I learned it had to be the exact same 68.
One.
Yeah. Which, you know,
the parent would like that particular one back. Yeah.
A bit ADD. Yeah.
And then I kept getting repeated calls from Dave Medicus where at a certain point I turned you off speaker because I felt bad for those around us because you were just bitching and moaning about the course.
I was bitching and moaning.
And Sylvia's like, why didn't you put Daddy back on speaker? And I was like, because I didn't want other people to hear him complaining. The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated at the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And you're Miley, rocking the Miley Cyrus shirt today. And on the other side of the snack shack, resting comfortably on the floral settee is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior. Thank you guys so much for joining us for episode 206 of the Inside Flap Podcast. Got a great show for you today. We've got our book recommendations, of course, the audiobook of the week. And we're joined. Now, listen, our guest this week, I can't tell you how excited I am to bring you. And I was telling him, When we first joined the call with him, I said, of all the books I've recommended on this show over the years, and it's been almost four years now, I don't think I've recommended an author more than I have this guy, and just so excited to have him on the show today, Don Winslow. Laura and I chatted with Don Winslow. You know Don, author of 21 novels, including The Cartel Trilogy. Also, The Force, which was amazing. You've heard me recommend his books for years.
He's got a new movie coming out.
Oh, he does.
With the Elvis kid.
Well, they're in the process of making it. Yeah. It's not like going to be out next week. Everybody excited. With Elvis, Austin.
Next year, maybe.
Austin.
Butler.
Austin Butler, starring it. And we talked to him about it. He's just a great guy. Real delight to talk to. And we'll have that. And, of course, his new book, which is out now, is the second book in his Danny Ryan series. It is City of Dreams. It's fantastic. I'll tell you more about that later, and we'll have our conversation, a great, funny, insightful conversation with Don in just a bit. But first, took a little three-day vacation over to Grand Junction last weekend. I mean, it's for me, it's hard to call it a vacation when the whole point of the trip was for me to run a marathon, and hard enough to run a marathon, but somehow it's always funny when I'm sitting on the couch 6 months away from actually running the marathon, and I'm looking at the schedule coming up, like, time to run another marathon. It had been a while since pre-COVID before I ran a marathon, since my last one, and this was number 18. But you're sitting on the couch, you got an NBA game on or whatever, and you're just scrolling through the list, and here's one in Colorado, the Desert Rats Trail Running Festival. Yeah, it sounds great. Oh, what's it got, 3,500 feet of elevation gain? Oh, that shouldn't be any problem with me. I ran Pikes Peak, that's got 8,000. Should be no problem. So you click on the little form, you sign up for it, and then you start training. And then, of course, the day of the race comes and you find out it's incredibly hard to run a marathon with 3,500 feet of elevation gain. You know,
that's
you
a
remember,
hard hike,
Laura,
honestly.
Now you like,
it would be a very hard hike for me.
Now you remember the scene from Moneyball. You like Moneyball.
I love Moneyball.
Brad Pitt is in Chris Pratt's house and they're trying to convince him to come out of retirement and learn how to play first base in the major leagues. And Brad Pitt is like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can,
it's not that hard, Scott.
Tell him, Wash.
It's incredibly hard.
the other coach, well, yeah, I'm here to tell you, it's when you're sitting on the couch looking at him, it's not that hard. Well, it turns out...
It's incredibly hard.
It's incredibly, incredibly
That's a great job.
Hard.
That's funny.
Yeah, great, great
That's
movie.
A lot of things in life. You're like, oh, how hard can it be? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, no, it's pretty hard.
I love it. And I love the Coach Wash behind him. When
it's not that hard, Scott. Tell him, Wash.
It's incredibly hard.
it's just great charm. But anyway, so I've been training for this marathon since January. You know, Thursday mornings is my late day at work, so I'd get up very early on Thursdays, and I'd go run Lookout Mountain and go, even when the road was a sheet of ice, straight up Lookout Mountain, 2,000 feet, endless hill repeats. So I felt pretty good heading into the weekend, heading towards the race. I mean, I was a little bit worried that the longest run that I had done was the one when we were in England not too long ago, when Dean Anderson...
Oh, he dragged you around London.
Dragged me around London, over the Tower of London Bridge. I mean, up and down at an incredibly fast pace. And so really finally funny. I said, Dean Anderson, we're going to have to cut this a little bit short. I don't call him Dean Anderson. We're out there running. That'd be a little awkward. So we cut it a little bit short. And that up to this marathon had been the longest run. And then when I went and I jogged a little bit with the kids afterwards, that's like 16 miles. So a marathon is 26.2. And usually you like to get, you know, maybe a couple runs of 18, 19 miles. Some people will run 20, 22 miles beforehand. But I still felt pretty good because of all the hill workout that I've been doing. So everything started out great. Laura, you dropped me off at the trailhead early in the morning. So it was a running festival. So there were actually on the Saturday three races going on. At 7 a.m. there was a 50K that went off. So there's the ultra runners doing the same course except the 50K course, and a marathon is if you're keeping track at home, kids, it's 42.2. So the 50K, they go out an hour before the marathon goes off, and then they after like 6 miles.
Oh, that's why the marathon was longer, Dave. It was listed as a 45K. So a marathon's 40.
Hell?
Yeah.
They listed it as a 45K.
It was on your bib. It said 45K.
No, I'm sure it said 42. It said 42K. It said 42K. And we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit.
I heard 45K being bandied about.
Well, maybe you need to look that up. I don't know.
Okay.
Right. The point is the 50K that went out, they do the first 6 miles of the course, then they do like a little loop, a little out and back loop, and then they meet up with the course. So they go off at 7. Then at 7:30, people who were scheduled to run 100K, well, I guess they were supposed to do that on Friday, but it snowed. The course was terrible. So the poor 100K people, they trained for 100K. They had to come back on Saturday, and they ran a 50K as well. But they went off at 7:30 for some reason. And everybody, and you, Laura, you talk about these bibs. Everybody had these bibs on. And if you're running the 50K, it was orange.
You're right. It's 42K.
Okay, yeah. The 100K was black. And the marathon, the 42K, was turquoise. So you can see your competitors along the course, which race they're running, which it helps to know. So we get off at 8 o'clock. And, of course, immediately this guy, he goes out like he's shot out of the cabin. I mean, he's out of there. Boom, way out in front of the whole pack. And there's about 100 people running the marathon. So he goes out, and then another guy goes out, like he's shot out of a cannon too. Not as fast as the other guy, but this other guy also, he's out there. And a mile in, he's turning around. Yeah, I know you're wondering who that second guy
That's
was.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, this guy with the two thumps. He looks back, and as soon as after 1 mile of the road...
Did you feel the heat of the other guy, and you're like, oh, I can catch that guy?
No, because no. I saw him, and I was like, and I knew my pace, and I said, okay, he's fine. You know, we'll let him go on off. No problem.
But then you still hustled.
Feeling the heat. No, I was feeling good. Okay. I was running my pace at that point.
Okay.
So thereupon, I was surprised to turn around at mile one and see the pack... In my rearview mirror. Mm. I was surprised.
So here's Med starting off, blistering pace. He's got Chariots of Fire playing.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly
in my
right.
mind, Chariots, and I had not started the music yet. But yes, in my mind, it was flow like a feather. Like, you know, when I ran the New York Marathon and came off the Verrazano Narrows Bridge and hit the streets of Brooklyn, packed six deep, giving high
Amazing.
Fives. Yeah, unbelievable feeling. You, then only found out later I'm running 6 minute miles. But anyway, so I'm feeling good. Then you hit the trail. You start doing the ups and downs throughout these mesas and canyons, and then it dips down along the Colorado River. It's spectacular scenery. I'm taking selfies. I'm actually taking video selfies of myself as I'm running. Feeling great. I had electrolyte tablets to go along with my gels because I always had terrible problems cramping. You, Laura, you remember when I was running Pikes Peak Marathon and I literally, as I started running down, both legs seized up and like a tree falling down in the forest. I went boom straight down.
I also remember in Boston where you also seized up towards the finish line, and a woman ran out of the audience and started massaging your thigh.
She did. I wish I caught her name. No. She was elbowing people out of the way to come down and massage my thighs, and it worked.
It
I don't
works.
Know what happened.
There you go.
So I got to say, is Laura, and you witnessed this?
I did not.
No. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Oh,
thanks, Giselle. Course, that's all I got to say.
Trust me. She was no Giselle. So I got those tablets to help with cramping. I thought, you know, that'd probably be a good idea to have. And taking the selfies, run along. Everything is going great. Oh, I also had to carry... So they had these emails that they kept going out. They're like, listen, we will be checking at the beginning of the race and during on the course to make sure that you are carrying your own water with you. Even though they had water stations, they don't have their cup free to cut down on litter. So you have to carry your own cup. They also – so they wanted you to carry like a portable cup plus 20 ounces of water at all times. And they said we're going to be checking. So I had my running belt, which is like this big old fanny pack that's so uncomfortable. I hate running with it. Yeah. And like I had like a Gatorade bottle of water. And then, of course, the strap comes undone. So it's like dangling down mid-thigh the whole time, jostling around. I get hot. And I had, because it was cold at the beginning, but like 6 miles in, I get hot. I had a long sleeve shirt on underneath my running shirt, which was an Orioles shirt. Go Orioles. So at that point, I don't want to stop because God forbid I should spend 2 seconds changing. I'm running along. I'm yanking off both shirts. I'm changing shirts. They're coated with sweat. I had to put the wet, sweaty Oriole shirt back on my bare chest and take the other sweaty shirt and wrap it. I felt like one of those suburban moms who would wrap their shirts around their waist.
What are you saying?
As I look to my right. But that's what I felt like. But I'm running. The point is, I'm running a marathon. I shouldn't have a long sleeve shirt wrapped around. But it kept coming unknotted, and I kept having to deal with that. And the back of the shirt is flapping along my backside, and I got the fanny pack there. It was just. My point is, it's very uncomfortable. I'm flapping.
You're
locked
one on.
For 20
just
miles.
Like a suburban mom.
Just like a suburban mom.
You have
mom.
A lot going on.
Yeah, for 20 miles. A lot going on. So these first 19 miles, I'm feeling great, right? I'm taking the videos, panoramas of the beautiful, the Colorado River was right there. We're running along that at one point. Feeling wonderful. Then, there's all the 50K people. At this point, I'm passing, left and right, I'm passing. And there's an art form to it too, because you're running in desert landscape, but it's a rocky desert landscape. So not only is the trail rocky, and sometimes it's hard to get proper footing. Yeah, I only fell five times. That's right, only five times. That's did they have audio of me falling down on the trail? But when you go to pass someone, there's not enough room on the trail. So what I would do is I make sure I'd kind of scuff my feet as I'm getting up to the person in front of me, hoping they'd hear me and move over. And oftentimes that would work. And if that didn't work, I'd get right up on them and I'd breathe heavily. I'd breathe my COVID breath.
Really?
And then when that didn't work, if that didn't work, I'd say, on your left.
Why wouldn't you just say on your left?
It's because it's listen. It's a lot of work.
Oh, okay.
When you're out there running 26 miles,
yeah, you're right. I'm sure.
Everything's just
know.
A lot of work.
I don't know.
And also, I don't know. I just feel like I feel it's easier if I can if they accidentally hear me coming, then they get over instead of some schmuck running up behind them yelling on your left. On your, you know, it just
sure.
it just paints the wrong picture to me. So and then it usually was no problem. One guy though, I got right on him. And the feet scuffling didn't work. The heavy breathing, the COVID breathing did not work. And I said, on your left, nothing. He's running along.
Earbuds,
and I'm running
yeah.
along. And I look at him. I don't see earbuds. Oh. And then so I say it again, a little louder. On your left, which at this point, he frantically and angrily, you can see it with his left hand, he gestures straight ahead of me like, well, go ahead then. But this is a guy who's not oh. getting over at all. And really, there is not a lot. But, you know, rules of the trail are, you know, you help a fellow runner out get over a
it's
little
not
bit.
It's a 500-meter foot race. I mean,
so he does not get over.
Is it because he doesn't want to slow down?
He does it. Like I said, running a marathon is very hard.
It's a lot of work.
Every little okay. thing, if you he does he certainly does not want to slow down. No. But the trail is very narrow, and even if he just gets over a little
it's
bit,
it's effort you know, maybe, on his part.
It's
and
effort.
Energy.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's effort and energy.
All right, I get that.
You're looking out for rocks the whole time. Everything
well, now
else.
I feel like you're the jerk. Okay.
Yeah, but you still got to run
you
the
gotta
race.
You got to pass him.
You got to run the
sure.
race. I got to
you know,
pass
Laura,
him.
It takes a certain type of person to run a marathon.
That's true.
Okay.
That's
all right. True. Okay. The part, listen, I'm not, I'm no, somebody's got to be a hero. Okay. So I dart around him. I get, you know, I have to like hop up, skip over a rock and then get around him. So I get around. But anyway, the point is after 19 and a half miles, the trail takes a dramatic right-hand turn.
Can I tell the listener and Andrew?
Yes.
So I'm at the house, right? The Airbnb that we rented.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I know, like, I have a certain time frame where I know I need to leave the home.
I had told you
to
be at
him.
The finish line at noon, right? Four
you,
hours.
You had originally told me 11:30.
11:30, 3.5 hours. I was very
and
optimistic.
So we were leaving with plenty of time,
right?
But still, 11:30 was still going to be kind of pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I have to get gas because, like, we're 20 miles away. For whatever reason, we're staying 20 miles away from where
right. yeah.
the race start is. And so Dave calls me. I'm coming in. I'm going to be there sooner than I thought.
right.
I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. I've only got this many miles left. I'm going to be
feeling
there a
great.
Lot sooner than I thought.
Feeling
and I was
great.
Like, oh, shoot. And I said, I'm so sorry. I'm getting gas right now. I'm going to do the best I can. We had to take a shuttle bus. We had to drive to a high school and then wait for
yeah.
a shuttle bus and get it. So I wasn't sure how long that would take.
Right.
And I was like, I'm so sorry. If I'm not there, I'm not there. You know, I intended to.
And little did you know that somebody else was going to run out of gas.
That is true. Yeah, true. That is true.
Yeah.
So I take the call, and then I'm feeling kind of stressed. I get a little anxious on Dave's race days.
Right,
I get a little anxious.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yes, Andrew, thank you very much for pointing out the obvious. The trail at 19 and a half miles took a dramatic right-hand turn and went straight up the mesa, and my spirits went straight down as
oh,
I started
boy.
Going slower.
So, Andrew.
And slower.
Literally.
And
10
slower.
Minutes down the road, yeah. Sylvia and I are in the car oh, yeah. after we'd gotten gas. We're not yeah. even on the highway yet.
It wasn't long
Dave
after
calls
that
and
call.
Goes, yeah. hey, you know what? Take your time.
Take your time.
Take your time.
Take your time.
You know, I'm not going to be there any time soon. Take your time. Take
well,
your time.
Well, I felt, yeah, because I felt bad.
I was like, how did it change?
Because yeah. then all the people.
It might not have even been 10 minutes later.
All the people who I had passed, now all of a sudden, now it's their turn to pass me. And I'm sure the guy who I kept yelling, on your left, I'm sure he took great delight in passing me. But the thing is, I would turn, and every time I heard someone coming, I would turn around and look at their bib, because I knew at this point, I was still, and I'm still, and still at 19 and a half miles, I'm still in second place of the marathon, because you can see, because once people started passing me, I'd turn around and look at the color of their bib, all orange, mostly orange, a couple of blacks, mostly orange bibs, no turquoise bibs at this point, so I'm still feeling, okay, I'm still in second place. But what happens in your mind as soon and as much you gain when you pass people mentally, you feel great, you get a little spring in your step. Well, once people start passing
the
you,
tide turns.
it's just it's impossible to overcome that. And after 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20 people pass you, even if you and you're still doing your best and you know you're still in good position, it's mentally draining, it's exhausting, and it just every step, and at this point it was very painful. Every especially when I'm going, it was up and down, every step downhill was literally like a knife to the quads. I mean, that's how, like, you're being stabbed in the quads. So you'd start to walk for a little bit, and then it just became that much harder to start running every time. Mentally, it's fatiguing, it's exhausting, it's draining. You don't want to start running again.
So Sylvie and I got to the finish line plenty of time, Andrew, and sat, enjoyed. They had nice music playing.
Right.
We sat in the grass. It was warm, beautiful day. We had a great time.
Yeah.
And then I kept getting repeated calls from Dave Medicus, where at a certain point I turned you off speaker because I felt bad for those around us because you were just bitching and moaning about the course.
I was bitching and moaning.
And yeah. Sylvia's like, why didn't you put Daddy back on speaker? And I was like, because I didn't want other people to hear him complaining.
So is this your Apple Watch or do you have your, you don't have an actual phone with you?
No, I literally have my phone with me because I was taking pictures, you know, and it, you know, with a race that long, you don't really, you know, it's fine. I wanted to be able to capture some of the course on me. And it was kind of a pain because I have to take it out. I had it on my hip.
I'd get another call.
Take it out.
And I'd be like, oh, great. What's he doing?
Well, and then I started sending you texts. I'm like, 2 miles to go, 1.5 miles to go. I get very excited when I set out 1 mile to go. And then I turn the corner and we're running up on this mesa and I look down and I see the finish line, except this finish line is not a mile away. This finish line, you know when I saw that? I saw my watch said 26, my watch literally said 26 miles. Now, marathon is 26.2. This is a Garmin watch. This is it. You know, like I've tested it on a track. It keeps perfect distance. It said 26 miles. We hit the overlook. I hit the overlook. I'm looked down. The finish line is all the way, way at the bottom of this mesa and far away.
And at that point, I get another call.
Yeah.
My watch says blah, blah, blah.
When then didn't you hear a guy pass me?
At one point, Dave's on the phone complaining to me.
Right.
And I hear a man's voice clearly passing him say, hang in there, buddy.
So he must have heard me bitching as he came up.
He probably wondered who you were talking to.
But I know it wasn't just my watch because another woman, and she, I turn around and there she, I saw the turquoise bib. And this was another, at this point, turquoise bibs were passing
me. There were some fast women on that course.
Yeah. And she's like, what mile is this? And I said, I've got 26.2. And she's like, yeah, but the finish is way over there. I'm like, yeah. And she kept running. I tried to keep up with her, but she was gone. But you know, finally finished in. And I didn't know what place I was in. But it was 4 hours and 45 minutes after I started, and then found out later that it was actually finished in the top 10, so 10th place,
seventh man
to finish. So not bad.
That's
not
great. Bad.
Only fell down. 5 times, only dropped my stupid water bottle out of my fanny pack about 5 times, which is great because every time it falls out, you got to stop because you hear it thunk in the desert. You stop, turn around, walk back, bend over, which is bending over at this point is about as painful as giving birth, I can imagine.
Okay, sorry, come on, man. You can't say that. Okay.
How about it's as painful as running your foot over with a lawnmower? How about that? I've done
really?
That.
Is it as that painful?
No, of course not. But it's incredibly painful. All right. It's let's just say in the words
it's
of
it's incredibly hard.
It's incredibly hard. How about that? So and then interesting getting back in the car and looking at my face in the mirror and just seeing crystals of salt all over my face. Mm. So extremely dehydrated. But there you go. That was your Desert Rats Trail Running Festival marathon recap. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Andrew, have you ever been to Fruta or Grand Junction, Colorado?
No.
So Fruta is a really pretty town, kind of like Moab maybe used to be a little bit.
Mm.
Moab's changed.
A nice small town feel to it.
Small town feel, cute shops, cute restaurants, no big chains or anything. And
so how long a drive is it from here?
About 4 hours.
Okay. 4 hours.
Yeah. Great town. Loved the town. So then we actually stayed in Grand Junction, though, and I was like, oh, they have a historic downtown area, too.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go see the historic downtown area. And they had a college there that has a school of education. I was like, Sylvia, let's check out this college while we're here.
Colorado,
we'll go walk around.
Mesa University.
Yeah. Walk around the university. Andrew, it's Friday night at like 6?
Friday night, 7? 6:30, 7 o'clock, yes.
Nobody there.
Ghost town.
We walk into the historic downtown area, which is right off the college. There's one restaurant open. There's a huge line for one thing. All the shops and stores and bars are closed, which is odd in a college town on a Friday night. And then there's one huge line, and it is for something called, I'm going to say the wrong word.
No, micro wrestling.
Micro wrestling. Do you know what micro wrestling is?
No.
It's wrestling with dwarves. Dwarf wrestling.
Dwarf wrestling. Yeah, because they had all the posters up. That was a huge line.
And I heard people say, it's a sellout.
Yeah, lots of cowboy hats for that one.
Yeah, but that's the only thing to do there.
Big micro wrestling
show. We're wandering around. I'm thinking, I don't know what to do. And then I see what looks like a, like a pinball machine, except more modern. You know how the pinball machines now are like graphics and stuff?
Electronic, yep.
And it said something odd, and it's like, downstairs. And I was like, oh, guys, this could be fun.
It said arcade, didn't it?
Arcade,
it said arcade downstairs.
And I was like, oh, this could be fun. Let's go see what's going on.
Yeah.
And then we walk in, and it's a very sterile room, and there's machines flanking. There's big tables. Very few people. The first indicator I had that it wasn't truly an arcade was there was like kind of a homelessy-looking person coming out with food.
Right, that's
true. Then when you looked around at the room, it wasn't young kids. It wasn't college kids.
Mm. These were people who looked like Nick Nolte in Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Yeah,
they were down on their luck.
Down on their luck. Down on their teeth, down on their luck.
But here's the thing. The machines... Now, Andrew, you've been in a Dave and Buster's recently,
that's
right?
What they look like.
So the machines look like the fancy new kind of fangled,
like the Go Fishing games,
arcade games you would see in a Dave and Buster's. Like you sit around a table, there's like fish swimming around, electronic fish swimming around, and buttons. There, this one woman is just like, just mashing a button over and over, sitting at this table with these fish swimming around. Just
because I first
mashing
got down there and I was like, where are all the college kids?
Right.
I thought there'd be kids here.
Miss Pac-Man machines, but just weird.
It was a weird vibe.
Not slot machines. There was no none of this going on. No sounds. The only sound you could hear was the
banging.
The banging of this button being hit by this woman over and over
again. But it's a casino, and this weird kid comes up to us.
Captain Beefcake.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like a gym bro type of kid.
He had like roided out arms.
Yeah. And just explains it to us. Have you guys been here before? No? Okay.
No. What he said was,
I don't know. You tell from here.
He sauntered over to us. And first, Sylvia was like, what, is this guy coming over to us? We're standing and then we're trying to get the lay of the land.
We don't understand what's going on.
I'm looking for a Frogger machine. And Sylvia's trying to figure out.
I was looking for something identifiable too.
These are not people with.
I was like, there's going to be something here I'm familiar with.
Buckets of quarters or anything. So the gym bro starts walking over, and Sylvia's like, is he coming over to us? I'm like, no, why is he coming? He doesn't work here. Well, he did work there, and he was coming over to us, and he saunters up to us, and he said, hey, guys ever been in here before? And we're like,
that's exactly how he sounded, too.
I'm like, no, we have not. And then he looks at us and goes, you ever been in a place like this before? No lie, that's exactly what he said. And I'm like, well, no, sir, I don't think we have. But let me tell you what we got here. And then he's got this whole spiel about, so it's gambling.
It's full on gambling.
But it's combined with skill, according to this guy. So these machines.
But it's 18 and over gambling.
Right. Mm. Not 21. And they don't, like, I didn't see any drinkers, anybody drinking alcohol.
They didn't serve alcohol, which I guess would be 21 and over. But I thought you'd have to be 18 and over to gamble.
18 and over
I'm
to
sorry,
gamble,
I
yes.
thought you'd have to be
no,
21 and
you
over.
You
have
to 18 and over to go into a casino.
Oh, so it's just alcohol. I always thought it was 21. Either way, we realized that it was Casino after the spiel, and right. then got
and that, then he's and he's, he gives us this whole long spiel about a skill base combined with little luck, but it's skill. That's how we can do it, you know. And he's like, so yeah, can I get you started with an account, a couple hundred bucks, get you going? I said, nope, sir. I will see you later. And we turned around and walked out.
It had to have been. I mean, the casinos are, I mean, to me, they're a little bit depressing, but this one was the strangest casino I had ever seen in my entire
life.
Five people
scattered around the joint, sitting there morosely staring into these machines, banging on buttons.
Yeah. So, Andrew, how have you been?
So, you know, it's been a good, productive time. I started a new job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been great so far. Maybe the best job of my life.
Wow.
You know where it has the potential to be.
Wow.
So
he doesn't usually say
what about
stuff like that?
Where that bakery was worked at on Ken Island?
Oh, you know, I'm talking recent memory.
Oh, okay.
So, now we're building a new house. And so the builder says, we're thinking the house is supposed to be done middle of August, September. Hmm. Then we find out from our builder, well, you know what? We're ahead of schedule.
That is wild.
So now we're talking like mid July.
Wow.
Which is a big, like, that's a big difference.
It's a huge difference.
Usually it goes the other way.
Yeah. And so part of it is we're...
Always.
Yeah, like, always.
I'm in the industry.
Way.
Always.
We need to sell our current house. Otherwise, we don't have the money to buy
the
new house.
Yeah.
So it's like my wife and I were look at each other, and it's just like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Except we didn't use the word crap.
Mm-hmm. And, inconceivable!
And so May 17th, we're listing our house for sale. But, you know, we have a house that is 3 kids, 2 dogs, 2 cats... And
it's lived in.
Yeah. And so we now have got to start getting this place pristine because, you know, we need to sell
it. Did you lose one of the cats? Did you
have
3 cats?
No, we always had 2.
2.
Yeah. Always.
The sisters.
Well, I had to go back and listen to
BB and Midnight.
Episodes.
Yeah.
I remember the kitties.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, that's what we've been doing is like working. And part of it is I've been working. Like for the last 3 months, I've been working nonstop to get things done. And Katie's taking it easy. Oh, you know, got plenty of time. But then all of a sudden when they change it, even she is like, okay, we don't have plenty of time anymore.
No, when you start looking at the calendar, that's coming up fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we have been really just busting ass like you wouldn't believe to get things done. We got like most of the stuff we don't want in the house to sell it is gone. I have 2 storage units now fold, 2 massive storage units.
Wow. Mm.
Basically filled with stuff.
Good for you.
And it's really getting to the point
where... That's what you got to do. If you want to get top dollar, you need to do that.
In one more week, I'm really going to only have a lot of piddly stuff left to do.
That's good.
You know, a lot of projects. So, you know, we'll see what happens in another week. But it's also been good exercise. The kids have been involved. You know, it's been a whole family thing.
It's good.
So it's kind of good as like in selling the house and getting the new house. I mean, it really is a family enterprise. So it's good, but you know, we'll have to see. We'll be playing the old, you know, house for sale lottery. We'll be listing our house as probably the most expensive house to ever get listed. And then hopefully it'll be the most expensive house to ever get sold.
You should add in the neighborhood.
Yeah, in the neighborhood. I was getting there.
I don't understand why. When I call Andrew, see, he is a whole different Andrew when he gets on the floral settee. When I'm calling him last week because I'm like, how's it going? Ah, the kids think they could work for an hour and a half and then they lie down and they're done. where's that, Andrew?
Well, that was Saturday.
Okay.
Sunday, the kids actually.
Oh, that's good. All
right. Nobody wants to hear about the kids actually pitching in.
Kicking here, but you know, it just comes down when you.
Oh, they're kids.
You promise your kid you're going to spend $2,000 to buy him the animatronic he dreams of.
Wow.
It's amazing how much that motivates him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we get to the heart of the matter.
That is the heart of the matter right there.
And now the truth comes out.
Now, let's
good old-fashioned bribery.
So the other thing going on is my son, Peter, who's into animatronics, he has 4 friends from across the country coming into town. Thursday.
Hmm.
And they are going to Greeley to Distortions. Now, Distortions is one of the premier quality animatronics manufacturers in the country.
Hmm.
I mean, they build, you know, $2,000 animatronics. They build $20,000 animatronics. I mean, this stuff lasts a lifetime. I mean, this stuff is made to last. You know, I was at a trade show with these guys, and they had like a guy in a straitjacket that is shaking so violently. You know what I mean? I mean,
and that's the owner. Am I right?
Yeah, that pretty much. Yeah.
What? How does Peter meet four people across
it's
the
just,
country?
You know, it's online. It's just all these
like
kids.
Reddit.
That, hold on, and these four are these kids?
Yeah. I mean, they're all similar age to him.
They're flying in.
Mm-hmm. They're flying in, and I met them at Transworld, which was the animatronics trade show.
Not what you think. Okay, wait a second.
In St. Louis.
Yeah, careful there.
I mean, how an animatronics
trade show. So he met them at a different show.
Well, he'd met them before the show, but they met up at the show. But these kids basically, they network and they all get together. So they're coming for this Greeley tour.
There's a whole other world going on here.
Yeah, a lot of those subcultures.
And apparently they're going to some animatronic bowling thing. And then I get to like host them this weekend.
Are they staying with you guys this weekend?
Maybe one day a bunch of the kids might be staying. We're doing like a bike tour. We're going to go to Ranky Brothers for a special
tour
Saturday. Do
you know their parents?
Yeah, their parents.
I've met one of the
kids,
Colton from California. I've met his mom. She's like an attorney.
Okay.
How old are these kids?
They're all within a couple of years of Peter's age.
Right. So, but they're all coming in with their parents.
I think most of them are. I don't know. There may be one who isn't, but they're all like, you know, I think the oldest kid's like 14 or something like that.
Right. Wow. So a 14-year-old kid is coming into town on his own?
I guess they've got parents. I don't pay attention to this. Just a teaser for next weekend.
Yeah, we need to find out more about this.
It'll be interesting to see how this all.
Yeah,
how this all
we'll
goes.
Be looking forward to this,
you know, this weekend. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Andrew, will you know,
Andrew, you're growing on us.
Thank you. Robert Justice said it best, and he continues to say it best. All right. Well, keep us posted on that. All right. Well, we do have a great show for you today. We're joined by New York Times bestselling author Don Winslow, and man, oh man, am I loving his new trilogy. I just finished reading the second book, City of Dreams. It is the second book in his epic mafia crime trilogy following City on Fire. This one finds Danny Ryan on the run from the FBI, the mafia, the cops. Pretty much everybody wants a piece of Danny, so he is on the lam, now newly widowed, and he's got his young son with him, his old father, and a couple of his crew members. So he heads west, eventually landing in California, but soon the feds find him and want to strike up a deal along with some favors. Meanwhile, Danny finds out that they are making a movie based on his experiences from back east in Providence, and he wants in on the action. This one nicely picks up exactly where the first book left off and sets up the third one. Lots of character development in it and fun to be had with the movie scenes. I literally just tore through this book and cannot wait for the third one as well as the movie. We need to figure out when that's coming out. Mm-hmm. This one also has plenty of action and danger lurking around about as mob life as much as Danny wants out seemingly keeps pulling him back in. A fantastic series. And just a fantastic chat. So, talking about his book, City of Dreams, this is Don Winslow.
You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you have even heard of. People who once suffered and struggled for fame.
Gosh. I still look sick around the eyes. Oh,
Don doesn't want to hear that.
No, he doesn't.
Hey, Don, how you doing?
You look great. I still look sick around the eyes.
Are you getting over an illness?
Yeah, I just finished a lovely cup of Theraflu.
Oh, lovely. Nice. Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in the,
you guys look great.
I'm in the lovely sinus infection recovery.
That's right. Yeah. Here. We're all, everybody's sick everywhere.
Yeah.
Nasty. Yeah. Where are you guys located?
We're in Littleton, Colorado, which is just down from Denver. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife lived in Denver for.
Oh, really?
15 years. Yeah. So we go there a lot to see friends. And
Oh, nice. Great. Well, next time, just pop on over. We'll leave the door open. We'll leave the light on, like they used to say in those Motel 6 ads. We'll leave the light.
You know what? I don't want to live in a big city anymore. We live way out in the country. But if I were to live in a big city, it'd be downtown Denver.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's a great.
It is.
It's a great city. It's, you know, we've been influenced by the coast, people from the coast moving here.
Yeah. Like, if you don't mind the smell
good
of
good or ill.
If you don't, yeah, if you don't mind the smell of weed permeating the air, that's all, it's a lovely city to be.
Californication. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of that going on. But Don, listen, thanks so much for hopping on. Really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure.
We are very excited.
Very excited. Yeah. If you can't tell. Yeah. This is
my mother in particular is very excited about this. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we'll
say hi for me. Well. Yeah, Don, we've been doing our podcast here for 3-4 years, and I think, and we recommend a book every week. I'm pretty sure you are number one as far as number of books that I've recommended.
All right. So thank you very much. Appreciate that.
And your latest one, good God, Don, how much did I love your new book, City of Dreams. Listen, this is a 28 years in the making Greek-esque tale of epic proportions about Zip Ties, Elmer Fudd, psilocybin, and a puppy named Pri. Don, what was it that inspired you to write this second installment of your trilogy?
Yeah, thank you very much for all that. This was always going to be a trilogy, you know. Unlike my sort of big fat drug books, which were accidentally a trilogy.
I love that, my big fat drug books.
Yeah, big fat drug books. My Magnus Dopus has been referred to. Nice. This was always planned to be a trilogy. Mm. And so, you know, I was following the life cycle of Aeneas from the Iliad through the Aeneid. And so I knew I had a hell of a second act.
Wow.
You know, a guy who has to flee his home with his senile father and infant son in tow, fleeing for his life.
Right.
Falls in love with a beautiful queen, in this case, a queen of the silver screen.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So I knew there was a great story there, you know, in the middle of this trilogy. And yeah.
So you were just hoping you didn't screw it up. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I'm always hoping.
It's always the goal.
Yeah, there's some mornings you get up and you start typing and the thought is, please just don't screw it up.
There you go.
Well, just get out of your own way.
I think we're all just trying to get out of our own way most days. Now, listen, you dedicate this book to teachers. I'm a teacher myself, so thank you.
I like to thank
you personally, dedicated to me. I'm a theater teacher, so not a real teacher.
Triple God bless. No, you're a very real teacher. I volunteered for years at the local school system as a theater teacher.
Oh,
really?
I started a Shakespeare program at the elementary school here in our little town in California. So elementary school kids, they just did their, I think, 27th production of Shakespeare. So it's been going on a while.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
And then I volunteered at the local high school directing, God help me, high school musicals.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. We just finished
just
Chicago.
Just finished the spring. Yeah.
Oh, you got... They let you do Chicago at a high school theater?
Yeah, it's for teens.
It was the teen edition.
Okay.
Of it. Yeah.
I'm amazed. Yeah. I had to go in front of the school board here to do Damn Yankees instead of Darn Yankees.
Oh.
Come on. Where the hell are you living?
That's California.
That's California.
Julian, California, a little town outside of San Diego. And they said, can it be Darn Yankees? And I said, no. Because of royalties and rights and posters. And, you know, it's got to be Damn Yankees. So,
Oh, gosh darn Yankees.
You probably want to talk about the book, right? what is this guy doing?
Oh, no, it's great. But you talk about the Aeneid. You talk about, you know, you use all these Greek mythologies that you draw upon. I'm curious to know, and this was your plan going in, did you get like 2/3 of the way through the trilogy and just want to chuck your laptop across the room trying to figure out how the hell to shoehorn in another wacky Greek catastrophe? How did that work for you, Don?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why it took 28 years to write.
I bet.
You know, you know, like, okay, who's Aphrodite in Providence, Rhode Island in 1988? Wow. You know, very few Greek goddesses there. What's the equivalent of murals on a wall? Aeneas famously founded the Empire of Rome. What could that be in 1990s America?
Wow.
And so those were always the great challenges, you know, really fun challenges.
It sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Does your brain still go there? like a little
bit?
Oh,
absolutely.
I'd have be
yeah,
trouble
yeah,
to turn that off.
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, when I read, for instance, the Oresteia, you know, three Greek dramatic plays of the
I'm
the
saying
aftermath.
I've heard of them, Don. Yeah. I have not read them.
Right.
So
I read them.
Okay.
You know, look, a guy comes home from the war. His wife blames him for the death of their daughter. Mm. She and her lover kill him in the bathtub.
Wow.
His son comes home, kills both of them in revenge. And then a group of cops relentlessly pursue him and capture him. Mm. That's a noir novel.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's a noir novel.
Yeah. That's America. You know? Yeah.
That's America. And so with so many of those stories from those classics reminded me of both real life crime and my beloved crime fiction genre.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was fun to do. But yeah, at times you just ran into a wall, you know, like kaboom. You know, like what could this possibly be? In the third book, you know, Aeneas's big conflict in the Aeneid was that he married a woman intended for someone else.
Mm.
And that launched the major conflict. That wasn't going to work, you know, for this.
Right, yeah.
So what could he steal or take from somebody else that would be of such value in the American 1990s that could launch a gang war? Mm. And it took me years to figure it out. But finally, it was a casino. Real estate. Instead of a princess, it's a piece of real estate that two sides want and end up fighting over. Mm. You know, so yeah, absolutely. I did not throw the laptop, but
but you wanted
there were
to.
Times it was probably poised. And the
ready.
Better angels of your nature take over, you know? Or the better angels of your American Express card say, no, don't.
That's true. That's more like it.
No, and explaining it to your partner, significant other.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi, babe. I just threw the laptop across the room because I was frustrated.
It's just me, Don Winslow. Just another day.
No, I'll be at the Best Buy if you need me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But listen, for those of us who are more into the mafia than the Greeks, the good news is you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to read this with cliff notes. Like you said, these are timeless stories that you borrow from.
Yeah.
Now, you're a guy from Rhode Island, and growing up, the mob obviously had a big presence there. How aware of it were you, you know, growing up?
Always.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was there.
Huh.
Look, Rhode Island's a tiny state.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, that's true.
And so everyone kind of knows everyone.
Mm.
You know, or everyone's sort of around. I think I joke in one of the books that on the state flag of Rhode Island should be the motto, I know a guy. Because that's, you know, a plumber, I know a guy.
I know a guy.
You know, so listen, I didn't have close relations with any mob people, but certainly they were around.
Right.
You know, you saw them in public spaces, you saw them in restaurants, you know, they were on the corners, you know. No, definitely. Definitely very much in that environment.
That's so fascinating to me. Who did you talk to for research and writing this book? Did you seek out anyone from your childhood at all?
No.
Sure. Okay.
Hell no.
Hell no.
If you grew up in Rhode Island, you don't do that. You know, the research for this book was mostly in terms of the classics.
Okay.
Was reading and rereading and rereading, taking college, online college courses.
Wow, really?
In those books and those poems. In terms of the research for the gangster stuff, you know, I kind of lived it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, though, having been living in mostly in California for the past roughly 30 years, I had to go back and get the accent again.
Oh,
and,
I bet.
Right. Yeah.
And the rhythm. And that took a few years, you know, of sort of sitting around and listening and all of that to get that rhythm again.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite kind of mafia movies that...
Listen, ones you'd expect, you know, I think probably the most realistic mob film ever made is The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which I want to say was 1973 with the great Robert Mitchum.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And written by the great George V. Higgins, probably the best crime novel ever written. In terms of New England mob, that was so realistic and so dead on, you know, a great book. But, you know, listen, I think anytime you come into this arena, and you write a mob book, you're aware that you're walking in shadows.
Yeah.
Right.
That you cannot avoid.
Yeah.
You know, you are walking in the shadows, of course, of the Godfather films.
Yeah.
You're walking in the shadow of Goodfellas, Casino, yeah. and then more recently Sopranos.
Oh yeah.
Right, you know? That's true.
What you kind of have to do is sort of nod to that right, and then forget exactly. about it. Yeah. Just forget about
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah. yeah. It'll yeah. hang yeah. you up and otherwise.
In fact, I yeah. think you had a character in this one say, you know, is this a favor? What's I'm making an offer I can't refuse. You literally.
Offer you can't refuse.
It's those
yeah.
little nods and winks to us that let you know we're yeah. all in on it together.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, it was funny. I mean, Godfather came out when I was a teenager and I saw it with the Sons of Mob people.
Wow. wow.
Yeah. Huh. And I never heard the word Godfather used with that meaning. Until after the yeah. film came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't call that guy the Godfather. He was the boss or the representante okay. or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So what happened in the mob world was that guys saw that film and liked what they saw. They liked
That's
that
right.
romanticized image of themselves yeah. and they started to imitate it.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a very sure. romantic image. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to be Al Pacino?
Yeah.
Now, you know, in a similar sense, you know, Godfather is a retelling of Shakespeare's Henry IV.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same plot with the moral poles reversed. So once again, you know, we have a contemporary crime novel that is taken from a classic, but you would never know it.
I feel like there's a class out there.
Like me,
I feel like you would be really good at helping people understand that the importance of these early tragedies and romances and all these great, great things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we need to tell them to read the book, but then they also need to understand where it comes from. It's not just created right. in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, but my hope for the books, and you alluded to this, is that you can read them without yeah. any reference to the classics at all.
Right, yeah. exactly.
And that's the test that I put every chapter to in these books. Mm-hmm. Like I would go back and reread them and say, do you have to know the Iliad? Do you have to know the Oresteia, the Odyssey? And hopefully the answer is no. It's just a standalone crime book.
Yeah.
But I wanted to take those great themes because we've invented nothing really. You know, all the great themes that we use in crime fiction.
They've kind of been around for a little bit.
The Greeks and Romans did them, you know.
Yeah, that's true. In your book, Danny goes to Hollywood and gets involved in...
It should be a subtitle for the book.
Danny goes to Hollywood.
It's so funny. I'm a little tired when you said, in your book, Danny goes to Hollywood. I thought, did I write a book called Danny Goes to Hollywood?
I know. You wrote that book, Don.
Come on, you don't remember that one?
We have
a
full song and dance routine that goes with it.
Yeah. With canes and everything, top hats.
He gets involved in a movie production.
Yeah.
And did you use experience from your own life for this section?
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listen, I've done a few laps in that pool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of those Hollywood sequences were written 20 years ago.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
When they were pretty fresh in my mind.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I originally came out to California as an investigator. Doing mostly arson cases.
Oh.
And so I was living in like the apartments that are in the book.
Oh, wow.
And then a little later, you know, my book started to catch on a bit with Hollywood and some have been made and a lot haven't.
Yeah.
But I've been, you know, in studios and in those meetings and on those sets, you know, enough to kind of know the terrain. So it was fun to take that on a little bit, tease it a little bit.
Sections were a lot of fun on the film set and the boys going to town, you know, one producer credit
just,
and all that.
Frankly, it cracked me up, the thought of those two guys. And,
those
you
guys.
Know, if you took those guys and you put them by the craft services table, they'd never leave.
No.
You know what I mean? They're like raccoons.
Hey, how you doing? What's going on? What are you doing? Come over here. Let's talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's shoot some craps.
Free food. You know, are you kidding me? You know, so it was fun to imagine that, you know, and that there's always been that sort of symbiosis between the film community and the mob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it goes way back to the 1930s and George Raft and all that, you know, with gangsters and actors rubbing shoulders. And I think each hoping something of the other would rub off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. And there's a lot of buzz about Austin Butler playing Danny Ryan. Are you excited about that?
You gotta be excited.
That's pretty, I am excited.
He's hot him, right now. Yeah.
He is. He's a good guy.
Is he?
Which means something to me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, sure.
It's nice.
And yeah, it is nice. And, you know, we've had a number of conversations. I think he really understands the character. He gets it.
He's
passionate
great.
About it. So yeah, that's really exciting. That's good news.
Good.
You know, and again, it's nice to work with nice people.
It is.
Well, and speaking of craft services, did you tell him if he's going to get in a character, he needs to eat his eggs over hard, just like Danny Ryan. You're not an eggs over hard guy, are you, Don? Come on, don't tell me.
Yes.
Really? Oh, I am. It's disgusting. Yeah.
Come on, man.
I am
an eggs over hard. You know, and I lived in England for 20 summers just directing theater there.
Oh, wow.
And it was literally physically impossible to get an egg hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just
came from there.
Capable of doing it.
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah. 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 It can't be done. And so that was a huge frustration. But I have taken more trash about the food comments in these books.
Justifiably so.
Yeah, I know, man. I guess I went off on clear chowder or something and offended the people of Massachusetts. I'd be in Europe and people would ask me about it.
Oh, that's so funny. That's really funny.
Yeah, the eggs are, we just took, speaking of theater, we took 73 theater kids over to London. I would not recommend doing it.
You look amazingly well.
Yeah.
Well, that's the cold.
We only lost one, and that was just for a little bit. So we went to the cold.
I've done that.
Have you done that too?
Oh, really? I didn't do 73. I think my record is 68.
Oh, that's about right. Yeah.
I got back to campus with 68, but the 68th was the wrong person. I'd left a kid in London and some random teenager just had jumped on our bus. That goes on your permanent record, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, they don't let you do it again when shit like that happens.
No. No, I learned it had to be the exact same 68.
One.
Yeah. Which, you know,
the parent would like that particular one back. Yeah.
A bit ADD, yeah.
Because you do a lot of pointing and counting. Sometimes you don't necessarily see the front of their face, you know? There's a kid there.
Exactly. Yeah. My kid went to Europe in high school and didn't come back, actually. I'm serious. The flight arrived and no Thomas.
Really?
And I said, you know, where's our kid? They said, well, our plane got canceled. We had to change planes. We had to leave three people behind, and Thomas volunteered.
And of course he did.
We were like, letting dad know.
You know, we were fine with it. You know, been to Europe since he was an infant because I was working there, you know, and flown back 100 times. So we were fine with
Thomas
it.
But
he decided, he told the teachers, they'll give us a hotel. We'll have a night in Munich. We'll have dinner. You know, do it tomorrow.
He's a smart kid.
Yeah.
He's a smart kid. Yeah.
Raised
a
smart kid.
Now, Don, I do have to thank you for, as a teacher, your video, Republican School Day. What an amazing video you made. Unfortunately, just right before spring break, we had a kid come into our school. I teach at East High School in Denver with a gun, shot two deans. Thank God. They're
right
okay.
Right before
spring break, he got in his car, drove into the mountains, and shot himself. And the tragic thing is, this is becoming the norm.
It's
more so
the norm
than the exception. So we appreciate doing things
really
like that.
Really appreciate
video
you.
Thank you for saying that. And you know, it sadly has become the norm. We don't seem to want to do anything about it.
No.
You know, and I don't know what else to say about it, you know,
but
the dedication to teachers, you know, is very sincere, because without you all, you know, none of us read these books, certainly none of us write these books, you know, and when I think of the influence of two or three of the teachers that I had on my life, I can't imagine my life without them.
Mm. Very nice. Yeah.
So.
Do you have a favorite book of yours that maybe people haven't read as much that you'd like to give a little shout out to?
Come on, let's give one of those old ones a bump up here, Don.
I'll give you an obscure one.
Yes, come on.
I think three people read.
Okay.
My mother would have been one
of
them.
Sure, probably.
So.
Your mom was probably. That was her. Please give her a special shout out for me.
Yeah.
A book called Isle of Joy, which has a different title in America. It's called A Winter Spy, which makes no sense at all.
Two different titles.
I don't know what. I don't remember, to tell you the truth. But yeah, it's a little favorite gem of mine. It takes place in 1 week in the year 1958 in New York City.
Nice.
That sounds great.
Which I thought was sort of the height of that kind of culture about jazz and nightclubs and all kinds of stuff.
So, oh, that sounds really good.
Thanks for asking that.
Yeah,
absolutely. We apparently are not going to be writing anymore, so we need to dip back in the old catalog.
Yeah, go back.
You're going to fight a good fight, though.
Yeah, you're fighting
a
good fight.
I think. Yeah. Look, I mean, there's only so much time, there's only so much energy.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that whatever, you know, skills that I do have are probably better put now to the sort of fight you were alluding to earlier about Republican School Day and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And defeating what I see as a right-wing threat to democracy here.
Yep.
Love it. We need you. Yeah.
For sure. Now, listen, as a runner, personally, I love the Steve Prefontaine shout-out in the book Pre the Puppy.
I can explain it.
Please, tell me. I got to know.
My dear, dear closest friend, Shane Salerno, also my agent and the guy who, you know, we do the videos together, had a golden retriever named Pri.
Gotcha.
Who's no longer with us. Mm. And so that was not only a shout out to Steve Prefontaine.
That's nice.
A shout out to my friend Shane and that Dawes used to sit in the backyard in Bel Air and throw tennis balls to him.
Oh, that's nice. Are you a runner at all?
No, I'm a walker.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a sort of a walk runner.
Okay.
I kind of mix them up. So, you know, I've been sick the last week or two, but typically I do about 5 miles a day.
Oh, that's great. Okay, yeah, that's
you
great.
You go sans headphones, you're just thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. The headphones to me are dangerous, man. I can't hear the car coming,
yeah,
you know?
That's true.
I've only done it once because I was listening to a baseball game or something. I just been thinking. I did walk off the edge of a bluff one time, though, because I was thinking too much.
Wow.
I was so into that I just missed the curve. And,
you know. Where are you walking on? The side of the highway? Where the hell are you walking down?
No, it's a little windy road up here. And
well, don't give out your home address, for God's sake.
Be careful.
No, God, I should be careful. Because
be careful. We know.
There are people who want that.
Yeah.
I have been stopped on that road, in fact.
Ugh,
have you really?
That's scary. Yeah.
We don't want a repeat of the Stephen King guy in the van incident.
No.
We don't want that.
Now, Don, when you're writing, do you have any quirks that you employ? Anything that has to be put in place where you sit down to do your work? No? You just fire away?
No. Listen, I think, you know, because early in my career, I mean, I was, look, 6 published books in my career before I could quit my day jobs.
Oh. Mm.
And so I had to write wherever I was.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Right. I wrote a book called The Death and Life of Bobby Z on a train.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites of yours.
Well, thank you.
That
was done on a commuter train from Orange County to downtown L.A.
Wow.
An hour and 10-minute trip. I'd write a chapter going up and a chapter coming back.
Huh.
And when the conductor would say, Union Station, 10 minutes, whatever was happening in that chapter, I'd wrap it up.
Wow.
Well, that explains a lot because there are a lot, especially towards the end, there are like a lot of short, fast. That's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, that's some great insight.
I had to get off the train, man. You know, I didn't want to go to Ventura. Or Oxnard. So
Don's got to get off. Chapter's over. Let's go.
And over. Whatever's
he
happening
jumped
with Bobby,
into the harbor. That's it.
That's it. You know, got to go to work.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But so I you know, listen, I wrote in tents in Africa.
Mm.
I wrote in monasteries in China when I was leading hiking trips.
Wow.
Planes, buses, trains, you know, all kinds of things. So I deliberately did not establish any habits.
Yeah.
Now, later on, when I got lucky and I could become a full-time writer, then I just treated it like a J-O-B. You know, 5:30 in the morning, I'm at my desk. 5:30 in the evening, I leave. The whistle blows, you know, because I'm a blue-collar kind of guy from a, you know, Rust Belt town. So that's the way I approached it. So I wish I could be more interesting on that answer, you know. But
no, you gave me everything. Commuter train answer.
I also think it's
really
smart,
dull, you know?
Because you're not gonna if you're able to write in a commuter train or a tent or whatever it is, then you can write anywhere. It's nothing's gonna. There's no excuse.
No excuse.
It doesn't bother you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just doing a TV series one time. I was driving down the 5 in SoCal. And the producer called and said, we need a new scene in 20 minutes.
Damn.
Oh.
And I pulled off and I found a coffee shop that had Wi-Fi.
Wow.
Now I'm down to 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
wrote the scene, hit the button, and they were filming it.
There you go.
A few minutes later. Wow.
You got that muscle memory built in, you know? It's easy peasy for you.
Yeah, you just don't freak yourself out. Right. You know, you go, I'll do the best
can
I can with the time I have.
Yeah, and you're a professional. It's what you do, right?
Yeah, and it's not like you have a kid on the operating table. You know, people are always saying, oh, the pressure of being a writer. What pressure?
Yeah.
You know,
it's different.
Particularly
it's a different
now
type
with
of pressure.
Computers, you know, if I write something that doesn't work, I rewrite it, you know.
True.
And so it's
there you go. No, and you had 28 years, for God's sakes, to do this one. So,
have you, you
right?
Have,
exactly. Yeah. So, how tough could it be?
It can't be that tough. Like, right, I didn't write a book in 28 years, Don. Come on.
Yeah. It's not like a pitch clock on it.
You a baseball fan? Are you a baseball fan? Who's your team? You go for the Padres?
The Padres. Yeah. I grew up with the Red Sox.
Okay.
You know, I just want to. You know, classic New England bitter chowder.
Sure.
And,
right. Long suffering.
But now I'm out here and I've been out here for quite a while. So, yeah, I'm a Padres fan.
Well, we love Manny Machado still. As you can see, I'm a big Oriole fan, but still.
I've noticed the hat.
Definitely. Yeah. Machado, watching him play is a treat. And you guys should be right there at the end of it. You got a great team.
Yeah, we should do well. We should do well. Of course, our lead starting pitcher dropped a dumbbell, a kettlebell on his foot and broke
his
toe.
They do weird stuff like that.
Yeah. Baseball
Classic
players.
San Diego.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And we have that little brother thing going with LA.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But now you guys are, I mean, you're paying the big time money. So now you're in the big boy world now.
Laid out
the
bucks.
Time
to
step up.
Yeah.
All right, Don, this is our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions.
Okay, it's got to be quick because I've got another interview.
All right, real quick, here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Wire.
Okay.
Oh, The Wire?
The Wire.
Yeah, as you can tell, as you know, I'm a big fan.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
19th century Africa.
Okay. All right, very nice. How about this, Don? A top five favorite movie?
Just one.
One of your top five favorite movies.
Butch Cassidy
and
the Sundance Kid.
Oh, nice one. Great.
I love that movie.
Yep.
How about one of your top five favorite books?
The Long Goodbye, Raymond Chandler.
Mm, nice. And Don, do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No, there are signs in front of most karaoke places saying Don Winslow not welcome.
Need not apply.
I like that. I've seen those signs. Okay.
Please, please don't sing.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I'm just looking at it. That's why I glanced over. The Last Gift by Abdul Razak Gurnah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. We chatted with him. He's what a great guy he is.
Yeah.
Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
I mean, come
Smarty.
On.
Smarty. Yeah.
Don, let's step it up. Let's get to the
step it up. I know.
Let's go. What are
you
doing?
Of me as an intellect, but there we are.
Look at you. How about that? All right, Don, listen, it's been a delight.
This
thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Let's do it again. I've really enjoyed it.
Love
to. Absolutely. Love to.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Cheers. Okay.
Bye.
Gotta run. Sorry.
No worries.
Okay,
you're good.
Bye-bye.
You're good. Bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right. There you go. That is the great Don Winslow.
What a treat.
Yeah. What a treat. Check out his book. And my favorite part of that whole interview was when at the very end he said, hey, let's do this again.
I mean, mine too.
Such a nice.
I know.
Such a nice guy.
I know.
You know. I was stretching.
I was stretching.
Okay. You know, sometimes peek behind the curtain, you know, Andrew often when he has something to say, he'll raise his hand. I look over there, he's got his hand up.
Oh.
I did just get a
text photo from Andrew of his garage floor.
And it isn't a good picture. Like it's not a
That is not a good picture.
Like the lighting is awful.
I will agree with you. That is not a good picture.
If I
zoom in though, it looks really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Let me tell you what happened.
Oh.
So I worked all day,
mm-hmm.
and then I had like an hour or so, and I quickly painted the garage floor. Like I had done all the prep work. I had done the trim.
It was ready to go.
So I was ready to just like roll it, and so I did that.
Mm-hmm.
That's your garage?
Yeah.
Boy, it is empty. I've never seen
it.
Yeah,
it is empty. And so basically, then I had an appointment at 5 o'clock.
We got to go walk the house when they have an open house. I want to see it.
Yeah, for sure.
So then I had an appointment at 5 o'clock. And you know, it was a 90-minute deep tissue, so we just massage.
Sure.
Okay.
And
yeah.
you know, and sometimes you have a massage and it's nice and it's relaxing, and you know, you feel like 10 years younger when you're done. But sometimes you have a massage and it's like they loosen everything up, and then you hurt like worse because they've loosened everything up. You know, and that's what happened today. And so that's me. Is I'm like,
I'm like stretching.
You're gonna be a little lethargic over there.
Yeah, I'm stretching because you know because of that 90 minute massage. I mean, it's tough.
It's a tough life.
It's tough.
Okay, tough life. Yeah. All right. Well, let's open it up, shall we?
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura.
She said that I know.
What do you have for us this week?
So I have a book called The Drift by C.J. Tudor. So this is a new book, came out in February. This is a snowbound post-apocalyptic thriller with a healthy dose of horror.
Oh, it sounds like right up your alley.
It is right up my alley.
Maybe I need to play your old theme song.
Thank you.
There you go.
That's right.
Okay, that's better.
That's so much better. So this is a quick read. It's a book you will not want to read while you are eating. Just putting that out there. That said, I loved it. I did have to put it down when I was eating one time, though.
Did you? Andrew's the big reader while he eats. I know go on your lunch and you always have your book with you.
And especially my new wallet cell phone thing. It makes a stand.
That's right.
So
that's right.
I can actually do stand. Like an iPod stand, which makes it even more convenient.
You could read the stand with using your stand.
I could, yeah.
I loved it. I love to eat lunch and read a book.
Hmm.
You don't do that? Well, I don't do it at home. I'm usually working.
If I'm home...
I'm talking about a weekend.
Yeah. I usually just...
You watch read the sports game pages or something,
You know, I usually read the sports pages that's at that point. Well, because, I'm reading the old school book, so, it's just kind of a pain in the butt
to
keep the book propped up with a dinner plate or a supper plate
or
a lunch
that.
Plate or a breakfast plate.
Okie dokes.
Or a bowl.
So... Yeah, there you go. So this book has three different timelines.
You're looking at me like, is he done?
I was trying to figure out how to segue out of that, and then I was like, I'm not going to be able to segue. So
speaking of bowls.
Three different timelines.
All right.
So I'm going to describe them to you.
Please.
So in one, a young woman named Hannah, she kind of wakes up after a horrific bus accident in the snow. Half of the people on this bus, they've died or they're actively dying, and the driver is missing. They're in the middle of nowhere. She and the others, it's a bus that is left, as far as you can gather as a reader when you first start, it's a bus that has left a prestigious boarding school in the middle of a very serious pandemic. There is a global pandemic going on. They have gotten these kids out. Supposedly, they're heading to a safe place. Supposedly, presumably, being the operative word.
Okay.
So that's one timeline. And another timeline... There's a former cop. Her name's Meg. She comes to in a gondola that's sitting on the side of a mountain in a snowstorm. She's in this gondola. It's a pretty big gondola. There's like a center seats and seats around the end with a few other people. One of these people is dead. She knows, and we start to understand. We're not told a lot. These people were headed to a place called, quote, the retreat. There's a dead guy in the gondola, and one of the people that she wakes up with, there's like six other people there, probably killed this guy. The author just withholds things from the reader. So, when this woman wakes up, she's very disoriented. We're disoriented as a reader because we're not sure where the characters are going. We're not clear on how they got there. And the same for that bus. So the third timeline, the last timeline, is with a guy named Carter, and he's at an almost abandoned ski chalet. Again, snowing.
Okay.
We're not sure what exactly the threat is, but there is a clear threat outside of the chalet, and he's afraid to go outside of the chalet or outside of the fence, but they're having trouble with the generator. And the generator is off and on a little bit, and they know that leaves them vulnerable because the security fence unlocks when it goes off. He's living with a few other people in this big ski resort that he doesn't seem to like, he doesn't seem to trust him. And then there's a lot of talk about this virus that's out there and then what might be left in the real world. So there's these three timelines. It's very exciting and you're trying to piece it together.
Wow, it's wild.
A very exciting read. I love the different timelines. I absolutely love not getting the whole picture. I like trying to figure things out. It was fun. It was a very surprised something really surprised me in here, and I was excited about that. Also, I would say the story itself, the ultimate story, is not implausible after having lived through this pandemic as to what exactly is going on. Very interesting. So it's an enjoyable thriller. It does have an undercurrent of horror, which I also enjoyed.
Nice.
And it's called The Drift.
Wow, that sounds really good.
It's very good. I got it from the library. Good. Yeah.
All right, cool. Check that one out. That is recommended by
Laura Medicus.
And my book this week,
Dave Medicus,
is called The Neighbors by Hannah Mary McKinnon.
Oh, yeah. You've read by her.
I have read. She is a fantastic author, and we're going to have her on the show in a little bit.
Oh, we are.
About her new book. This is one from a couple years ago called The Neighbors. This is a slow burn, but I just read it. New to me. And
sure.
If you're out there and you haven't read it, it would be new to you as well if you picked it
up. Is that how that works?
That's how that works. Believe it or not. Crazy, also, sure. Isn't it? It's called The Neighbors, and this is a slow burn thriller that heats up through a lot of rich characterization and getting to know everyone involved, and then all of a sudden it is Bombshell City. This is a brilliantly crafted psychological thriller that will linger in your mind long after reading it, and one of the reasons for that is the attention that she pays to character development. So when you're reading a book like this, and you've got multiple narrators and different viewpoints, you feel like the people that are involved in the story are real people, and therefore the situations that they're in become something that you believe in and you care deeply about. So this also is told in two timelines, or this is two timelines, there's three. One from 1992 in the past, and then another 20 years later. So in the current timeline, Abby, a couple named Abby and Nate, they are welcoming new neighbors, Liam and Nancy, to the neighborhood. And each one of these couples has a teenage kid. However, unbeknownst to their spouses, Abby and her new next-door neighbor, Liam, well, turns out they have a bit of a past in that they used to be lovers.
Mm.
And for one reason or another, it doesn't come up in the first meeting with all four spouses together.
Might be a bit awkward.
Yeah, a little bit. So then we go back to the timeline from 1992. We find out just how Abby became involved with Liam. And we also find out about the horrible car accident that she was involved in while driving and the damage she inflicted that is still affecting her and others many, many years later. So as I said, this is a real nice slow burn, but because it's so well written and well crafted, you are just drawn into the story and don't want to stop. And so you kind of slowly gobble up these hints and these clues about the past, and you got to kind of piece everything together to try to figure out where she's going with it. And then you get there and you're like, okay, I did not see that coming. But fantastic book. The Neighbors by Hannah Mary McKinnon. Andrew. What do you got for us this week?
So I've got a great book this week. It is called Junket, Untamed Alien World. And you know, that describes this book perfectly. Now, this book is authored by none other than Mark Wayne McGinnis, who is a Castle Rock.
Hey.
Oh, local guy.
Love that.
And really? I've reviewed a few of his other books.
Sounds familiar. Yeah.
Fallen Ship, Scrapyard Ship.
Oh, yeah.
So he's written those series. He's written over 40 books.
Wow.
You know, and I'm going to be moving impressive. To Castle Pines, so he's going to be like
next door neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, downtown Castle Rock's really cute. I don't know if you've been there before.
And I haven't, but, you know, but Mark Wayne McGinnis has talked about a cafe there. And I can't wait to give that cafe a try sometime.
Cool.
So it's kind of cool that this, you know, this book's written by somebody who's practically going to be my new neighbor.
I love it. So I mean, your neighbors.
I'll have to stalk this guy.
See if I can
find him. So, this book is probably, you know, the most sophisticated book of Mark Wayne McGinnis's that I've read. You know, and there is a lot going on in this book. And so, this book is it's a cross between Jurassic Park, Alien, and Columbo.
Wow.
Right? So you basically
have got... I'm all in.
Yeah, and so...
Just one more thing.
The basic premise is you have Captain Miller, who is a retired, you know, like, space officer, and he fought in two intergalactic wars. He's had enough. And so he decides to buy a, you know, like a surplus military ship retrofit it to be this luxury liner. And somehow or another, he ends up with this huge tract of land on this alien planet, like, you know, 400 square miles. And, you know, let's just say, and this world has, it is extremely challenging world. It is being settled, it's being exploited, but people are also trying to protect it. And so Miller is trying to take advantage of this world, but not take advantage of it. He's not like trying to like ruin what it is. Mm-hmm. And so he takes some very small but expensive junkets, you know, to basically tour this planet. And then they will also visit his tract of land. Now, this planet basically has, you know, pterodactyl-type creatures.
Oh, that's cool.
That's fun.
The size of a school bus.
That is cool.
You know, it has gorilla-type creatures that are, you know, maybe twice as big as an Earth gorilla.
Okay.
And maybe smarter. Hmm. It's just got all kinds of interesting wildlife.
Isn't that a human?
It's got sort of like, yeah. Yeah. It's got sort of like a crocodile, you know, type thing that's sort of like a cross between a crocodile and a lobster.
Okay.
You know, that if you get too close, it will
clampy.
It will cleanly decapitate you. Right. And so this is a,
good you know, clampy.
This is an extremely dangerous place. Now, if you follow Miller's rules, you will be reasonably safe. But do tourists follow the guide's rules? No, they don't.
Well, that's a good premise.
Yeah. And so, and believe me, there is more going on. And so the tour before this one, three of the tourists are killed, right?
Whoa.
And maybe they've been murdered.
Oh, hence the Columbo.
Yep. So there could be a serial killer.
Wow.
On the loose.
This sounds like a great book.
Yeah. And then, let me see. There's other things going on. So, and it also turns out this latest junket, you know, basically there is a, you know, let's say that there's a, everybody that goes on here is extremely wealthy, right? Because you can't afford to go on this trip unless you have got, you know, millions of credits to spend. Hmm. Extremely expensive luxury, you know, cruise. And like I said, it's, think about like Jurassic Park meets Alien, right? I mean, that's what you're looking at here.
Okay.
And so, you know, and there's one guy who's a, you know, megalomaniac, extremely wealthy, maybe one of the wealthiest people without any scruples or morals that's on this junket. And of course, he tries to control everything, and there may be a lot more going on. Now, of course, there's also a, you know, a Cherokee wildlife ranger who, you know, who basically, you know, has to respond when animals are killed that shouldn't be killed. You know, and he also has been charged to investigate the serial killer because he's probably the best qualified to figure out who's killing these tourists, you know, and why. And then let's see what else is going on here. And then, you know, so I don't know. It's, oh, and so just before they're getting ready to go on this junket, Miller's sister, who was a senator back in the States, she was murdered. And so of course they're getting ready to take off. And now he has become the guardian of his 10-year-old niece. So now she is going on the junket with them as well. So now he's basically got to keep an eye, you know, on his 10-year-old niece. And so there's all kinds of stuff going on here. There's subplots. It goes back in time, so you get some of the history.
Oh, cool.
So you get to see how people have ended up the way they are. I would say the book, there's a lot. It's a little slow to start, but once you actually get on the junket, things really take off. And it's really fascinating just to read the description of the wild, you know, wild alien life on this planet. Now they interact. Now there is one scene where a woman is bitten by one of these, you know, gorillas, one of these like 9-foot gorillas bites this woman. And of course the 10-year-old girl is like, oh, she's going to turn into a werewolf now. And everybody's like, oh no, that won't happen. That won't happen. Does it happen? You'll have to read the book to find out. But the book is called Junket Untamed Alien World, Mark Wayne McGinnis.
All right. Recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Which brings us to the audiobook of the week. And my pick this week is The Quiet People by Paul Cleave. Second week. Look at Paul Cleave making it second week in a row. because he's just that good. I'm really into him right now. Narrated by Chris Dyer. It's another great one from Paul, who's fast becoming one of my favorite thriller writers. This one has a great premise. Check it out. It is set, so it's another book setting because the author's from Christchurch, New Zealand. So it's set there. And it's about Cameron and Lisa Murdoch. They are a successful husband and wife writing team, and they write crime fiction. Now, they do it so well that when they're going about interviewing, you know, doing the interview rounds for selling their books, they joke about how they know so much about murder that they'd be able to commit the perfect crime and cover it up and would never get caught. Well, wouldn't you know it, one day, their seven-year-old son, their difficult and challenging son with anger issues,
oh, no.
He goes missing.
Oh, no.
And the cops, they start to suspect this couple of maybe practicing what they preach a little bit. And maybe they're getting away with the perfect crime.
Ooh. That's a weird one.
Well, when you got when you have the father who was seen in public doing, I don't want to give too much away, but there are other reasons why they suspect
they're not a great
this couple.
Couple.
Well, they're, and there's also a journalist who's kind of revenge-driven, who has a past history with them, adding kind of fuel to the fire and putting word out there by speculating about it. So gradually this couple gets drawn deeper and deeper into it, and then we just watch horrified as it all goes down. And, you know, that's about really all you need to know about it, all I really want to say about it. But it's full of the dark humor that Paul Cleave is known for, and the plot is kind of just intensifies as it goes along, and you'll find yourself immersed in the story as I was. Check it out. Let's listen to a clip. This is The Quiet People by Paul Cleave.
Every part of his body wants him to go faster, to put as much distance between himself and his house and get this over with. But he fights the urge, keeping the needle hovering on the speed limit. Last thing he needs is to be pulled over for speeding. He swears at every red light and thanks God at every green. His car is making a weird ticking sound. It's been doing that for the last few weeks, and he's been meaning to get it looked at. And what if this is the trip where it gives up?
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. That's our show this week. Thank you for joining us for episode 206. Back here next time. My name is Dave Medicus, and thanks for joining us.
Adios.
Excelsior.
You ever been in a place like this before?